Another Safety Finance Division will come to order. Members, today we're going to finish up the review of the Department of Corrections budget. I think we completed most of the DOC presentation on their PowerPoint presentation, but there were other questions and that were outstanding that we want the DOC to respond to. In your packets, you should have some information that was either requested by this committee or that I specifically requested. You should have a document that lists the individuals in the Operations Support Division of the Department of Corrections, and we can have some discussion about that. You should also have in your packet a list of all the new hires in the last year. The Department of Corrections has also provided us with some audit reviews from 07 and 08. There's some other information that we requested that has not come in yet, but we will get that soon. And then maybe if we have the commissioner come up, then we can start to one of the things, Commissioner, that I know we sent out in January, this was before the governor's budget came out, but we had requested that the Department of Corrections, along with other divisions within this division, provide us with both a realistic proposal for both a 5% and a 10% cut, if that were to happen. So I don't remember, I was asking Ms. McMahon, we don't remember seeing any documents that gave us what that might look like. Are you still going to provide that with us? Are you prepared today to talk about what a 5 or 10% budget reduction might mean?
Mr. Chair, I'm prepared today. A 5% reduction would be $47 million for the biennium, and a 10% would be $94 million. We looked at every single thing we could think of in trying to come up with that number, and we couldn't come up with a realistic plan to cut that much and still without compromising public safety. We looked at closing a prison. We looked at early release scenarios. We looked at a number of things. And in my meeting with the governor, he was not willing to look at early release because he felt very strongly that it would compromise public safety.
So, Commissioner, you're just telling us that you can't survive any cuts at all. This is just...
Mr. Chair, we do have cuts in our budget.
But you couldn't, the 5% cut that...
At $47 million, no, sir.
What would that actually mean, Commissioner, though? I mean, did you think through? I mean, here's sort of what our dilemma is, Commissioner, just to be frank. And I, President Coles is not here. President Coles and I, as the lead minority member and as the chair, submitted the governor's budget, as you probably know, last week. And I think it was last week. And I suspect that as we go through this process and analyze your budget, and as this committee gets a target, which we don't know what it's going to be, and we look at our priorities for this committee, we're going to have to come up with a budget. So there's going to be a delete all amendment to the governor's budget, and it's probably going to look very different. And you're providing us really absolutely nothing if any direction at all, if we had to make a 5% cut. And the reason I bring that up is we had a long discussion, for those who are on the Finance or Ways and Means Committee, last night about the budget forecast with Dr. Stinson and Commissioner Hansen. And this is a very bleak scenario. And And all I continue to hear is that the governor is not willing to increase any revenues. And if that's the case, then we're looking at a budget scenario that's going to be very, very different. And I just don't understand how the other divisions within our purview can provide us with an estimate of what a 5% cut might look like, yet you can. At least so we have a scenario, what does that mean? You can say, you know, yeah, we'll close one prison. Well, that's not a very realistic scenario to us. I mean, you have a fairly large brain trust at the Department of Corrections. It seems to me you could say if we had to prioritize what 5% might look like, here's the models, here are some scenarios so that we can realistically know what your priorities are to ensure public safety. Right now, it's going to just be up to us, I guess, to try to figure that out, if indeed we have to make a 5% cut. I'm hoping that does not happen. But I just feel like I'm in a real bind here, and I don't know if other committee members feel that way.
Mr. Chair, we did look very hard at this. We brought up things such as reducing, the treatment in the prison. Custody, obviously, we have to look at first. It's 70% of our budget is the prison function. So we looked at, eliminating treatment programs. We looked at the early release scenarios, and you have, Mr. Carter, got a copy of what that would mean for each one of those. It isn't like we're not trying to help here, but as I said in a couple of my previous presentations, we have taken it very seriously in 2003 and all the way through. About cutting and making cuts, and it's been $85 million that we've cut. We've increased prison populations. We just can't run prisons and the supervision in the field without the staff to do it. And we're the most low cost in the country in terms of what comes out of the general fund. So I don't know what else I can tell you.
Well, Commissioner, it's not very helpful. That's all I can tell you. I mean, I just, maybe we should wait and have this discussion after we get a target, but if the governor has given you a 1.24% increase, I can't say that that's going to be, it just seems very unrealistic to me if there are no revenue increases. That's what this legislature is going to come up with for your budget, and if you're not going to give us a plan, I guess we'll have to figure it out once the target comes out, and I don't think that's a very productive way of trying to work together. And it seems to me you could at least provide us with a scenario like other divisions have regarding your priorities. The courts have done this. They've given us a list of what is they consider high priority, what they will continue to prosecute, what they will continue to do if they were to sustain a 5% cut, and then medium level priorities and then low priorities, and then we have to make those decisions, which is not going to be fun either. But at least they've gone through that exercise, which you have not done. And I'm wondering if you can still provide such something to us rather than just saying we're going to close a prison.
I don't know what I can provide to you. I mean, we have looked at this. I don't think it's wise to, cut chemical dependency treatment. And, I mean, I don't know what we have left that we can do for $47 million.
Well, I could start asking you some questions, but I think I'll wait and see if other members have some questions, because I have some questions about your operation support services, and we can maybe we'll just start to peel the onion today and keep going, Commissioner. What's going to call?
Mr. Chairman, my sincere apologies for being a few minutes late. I'm hearing some things from Commissioner Fabian, and Commissioner Fabian, I am a big supporter of making sure that we are doing everything we can in the Department of Corrections to keep Minnesotans safe and to keep department staff safe. That has to be job number one. Mr. Chair, I am hearing a few things from Commissioner Fabian, things that she may not want to pursue, but some things that could be pursued. I mean, she's talking about, you know, some of the programming inside prisons, and there are costs associated with that. May or may not be a good idea or something we want to do, but I am hearing some of those things as options. But Commissioner, I do think that what Chair Pamar is suggesting is something that I hope the department will take to heart. I don't know that we as legislators in this committee should be making all of these decisions without... We should do this collaboratively if we can. Otherwise, Chair Pamar is going to be stuck with the decision of, you know, how is he going to do it? And what's this committee going to do? And I happen to think that there might be some places we can find some savings, but if we don't do it collaboratively, if you don't help us do it, it's going to happen to you, I think is what Chairman Pamar is suggesting. I don't want to see that. I'm gonna work hard, Commissioner, to try to avoid that. I'm gonna work hard with Chairman Pamar to try to make sure that that he has a target that isn't going to require those kind of reductions. But I think I understand the makeup of the House of Representatives and the realities of some of the other committee chairs, and I have a sense as to what might happen with Chairman Pamar's target. I'm not very excited about it, but it's going to be the reality. We're going to have to pass a bill out of here that fits the target that he's given. And again, I'm going to work hard to make sure that target's as high as it can be. But I don't want to see. I'm concerned that we're going to be making some decisions for you as opposed to making some decisions with you. So Chairman Pamar, I think you and I may have some different opinions as to where some of those savings should come from. But I am going to work with you, and I'm going to continue to lobby the Speaker and Chairman Solberg and others to do everything we can to make sure we don't have to make those kind of cuts to the Department of Corrections, which I think is one of the critical public safety serves one of the critical public safety functions here in the state. But I do hope that we can do this collaboratively. I'm not sure we will be able to, but that's certainly my hope and intent here. So, Commissioner, I hope that you take Chair Pamar's words to heart, and hopefully we can do this together instead of us doing it to you, because that's not a scenario that I look forward to at all.
Commissioner Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner. Part of providing us with what the consequences would be give us the ammunition to say to whoever is going to be setting the target, these are the real consequences of the cuts that are being proposed to be made. Right now, the argument is that it is not in public safety's best interest to make cuts to the Department of Corrections. But as you know, Minnesota is one of the lowest spenders in the rankings, and so people have the perception about how full the prisons are with people that are just property offenders or nonviolent offenders. And so if we don't have the evidence of what the consequence would be to public safety of a cut, it's very, very difficult to just, you know, superficially convince others that, in fact, we shouldn't be cutting here.
Representative Olin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just going to throw a comment in, being the former prosecutor and also being one that understands the prison situation. But when we hear that the cut corrections is detrimental to public safety, but on the same time we can turn around and cut the courts and public safety department itself, I have a hard time buying into that factor. Because the courts and the public safety are just as much a part of the public safety overall in this state as the corrections is, and I have a very hard time buying that philosophy.
Okay, members, I hope you have a... I'm sorry that you got this information so late, but we have some information. If you have any questions about it, I do have a few questions. This is our chance to... Not that we won't have DOC back, but if there's issues in the budget book that you have questions about, I have... Oh, Representative Bigham, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Mr. Chair, in Commissioner Fabian, I was the one that asked about the audits and reviews. Two questions that I have right now are, it looks like when the Red Wing facility, some of these, it looks like it's a year to fix them. I'm just curious as to the time frame. It would say like that, or maybe it's just the same thing that happened every time at the same year. But so I was wondering what the situation is with that. The other is, not a lot of information on here when it talks about, and by the way, some of these were, you know, they didn't have any issues at all, but just wondering, two violations, no citations, like in the segregation unit of the Stillwater facility. Wondering, what were those two violations? You know, it's just like one-liners. I'm wondering if there is something that has a little bit more detail as to whether some of these violations are reoccurring.
I'm sorry, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, I'm Assistant Commissioner Lisa Cornelius, and if I would like to answer Representative Sands' question. We tried to, this is a lot of data, we tried to collect it as quickly as possible, and it probably would have taken us another 30 days if we were to list out all the violations. If you have specific questions for specific ones, perhaps you could get those to us and we could get back to you. Typically what happens is a lot of these, some of these things are done annually, some of them are special audits by outsiders. We do tons of internal reviews. We do peer reviews for fiscal services. We do security audits. We do some peer reviews in our HR department to make sure we're doing stuff appropriately. But if you do have specific questions on specific audits, we can get to you.
Thank you, Chair Paymar. And maybe this is something that we can follow up in Representative Hilson's committee, at a later date. But as far as some of these questions, because I just think they do merit hearing. The other question is, last month, the OLA released the MNCOR legislative auditor report. There were some recommendations. Just wondering, Commissioner, if you would care to comment on the four recommendations that were presented and if you are taking any formal steps right now to remedy any of those.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we are taking steps to remedy. I think we had a letter outlining that in the back of the report. We felt pretty good about that report. We felt that they, did a very nice job, and they certainly, listed a few areas where we've already either remedied it or are working on them.
At this time, I'd just like to say to members in the audience, if there is anybody who wants to testify on the DOC budget, we'll allow for a few minutes at the end of our time here. We are planning on having a public hearing for our budget in the future. but we will allow, if there's something specific about the Department of Corrections that you would like to address, we'll allow about 10 minutes at the end. Seeing that there is a quorum, I need a motion to approve the minutes for March 3rd. Representative Reinert moves the minutes of March 3rd. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? That motion prevails. Questions, members? Commissioner, I don't know if you're the one to ask this question about, but I just want to get to the topic that seems to always be front and center here, which is per diem. And I'm looking at page 15 of your performance report. And maybe you have answered this question in Representative Hillstrom's committee. I'm not sure, but I am struck by the high per diem rate at Red Wing. And I guess the two questions is why, that's number one, and then two, why are there adults incarcerated at that facility?
Ms. Cornelius.
The reason the per diem rate at Red Wing is so high is because of the low number of adult offenders there. There isn't much for economies of scale, so that does push that per diem up. We have offenders there because we have the bed space, and we thought it was a viable option, and it does provide Red Wing with an adult workforce to help with the grounds and the maintenance of that facility.
But I don't understand why the per diem is so, I don't get that. Maybe you can explain it to me. Why?
You have to have a certain level of staff to monitor the living unit. And because the whatever the cost is, we can only divide it, I think it's by 33 offenders. Now, if that building was bigger and we could stick 60 offenders in there and have that same level of staff, that per diem would go down.
And do we have other juvenile offenders at other facilities? The Togo has the other, is that our other juvenile facility?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. However, that is a different level of offenders. The offenders at Red Wing are serious and chronic felons, and Togo is a different type of program.
Okay. And the per diem rate that at Moose Lake, I mean, I know you provided a document with us before, but that also seems higher than our other facilities. Is there an explanation for that?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. Currently, we are housing 256 DHS patients there, and so we are only charging DHS the cost above and beyond what it would cost us to house those people. So they are paying us for sending people to Prairie, and they are paying us for just some additional staff. So in essence, we're kind of subsidizing them. So when we calculate our per diem, we only use our offender population. We do not include those 256 patients from DHS. So if we were to do that per diem, if it was full with our inmates, that average daily population would be closer to 1,036, 37.
So when you say we're subsidizing DHS, so that... So
we're paying the utilities, we're paying for most of the food, we're taking that cost on.
The, what's that question?
Can I ask why? Why are we doing
Ms.
that?
Ms. Cornelius?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom. When we met with DHS and the Department of Finance, we wanted to make sure it wasn't an overall higher cost to the state. And so if we would have charged DHS for all of that, it would have been an accounting shift where we would have had to return the money to the general fund and they would have had to give it to DHS. So it was in order to not have budget transfers from different agencies.
I understand that it might be, but we don't want to have our budget nicked for something that should be coming out of the Department of Health. And so, Mr. Chair, I would hope that we could get some additional information so that we accurately in our budget get that money for us to spend.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, they're, by June, supposedly, they're going to be back in their building. And we will be able to bring our 250 back from Appleton. So it won't be ongoing expenses.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we could just find out how much and we need to subsidize them between now and June. Again, as we're advocating for a higher target, this might be one reason.
Okay, Representative Kelly, then Cole.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Cornelius, just to follow up on Chair's question on the per diem at Red Wing, so that chart is just the adult per diem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kelly, that is correct.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Kelly?
Do you have a number for the per diem on the juvenile?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kelly, I believe what we're charging the counties right now is like 120 or 125.
This exact point, Mr. Chair. So is that what it actually costs us, or are we subsidizing the juvenile programs through our males being at Red Wing and our females being at Togo?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilton, that is not the total cost. Per statute, we only have to charge 65% less education. So the state is paying for the education without charging the counties that.
Mr. Chair?
To this point,
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Yes, you're going to help,
sir. Thank you. So then do we get reimbursed through the Department of Education for the juvenile's education just as we use ABE money for the adult offenders in the prison?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, no, we do not get reimbursed from the Department of Education. And that is the purpose of the splitting of the funding, that we don't charge the county for the education and we don't get reimbursed.
Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess more a comment with regard to the Moose Lake facility. Mr. Chair, I know that Representative Westrom has introduced a bill that I hope you will give some consideration to that would involve sort of some shifting of some populations and possibly reutilizing the Moose Lake facility. It does open up that can of worms regarding Prairie Correctional Facility in Appleton, but you know, it appears at least initially as though there may be maybe some cost savings. I hope that the department will come and talk to me and share with me their concerns or ideas regarding that proposal. And again, there may, as we're looking for cost savings, I know that there are mixed opinions about whether we should be putting more offenders in private facilities, but we have one here in the state that that has capacity, and there may be a way to move some people around and save some bonding money going forward and other things. So I hope that I hope you'll consider it, and I hope that Commissioner, somebody from the department will come and share their concerns or ideas about that proposal with me.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to this issue about the costs that are being subsidized. And I know I hope I didn't miss something here, but am I understanding that when DHS gives us their per diem for housing sex offender program, the civil commitment program, they are not including some of the costs that because you're subsidizing them? Am I correct in understanding that?
Ms. Cornelius.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leiby, I probably should not have used the word subsidized. DHS is paying us for any additional cost for the Department of Corrections to house these offenders. And if it's just a temporary situation, we have a contract with them. And when we met with the Department of Finance and the Department of Human Services, you know, we listed all these costs, and we listed what extra staff we might need to help with security or what any additional costs might be to the agency. So they pay us for any of those additional costs, and that money helps pay for those staff, and it pays for those beds where we've had to shift inmates to Prairie to accommodate this population. Now, if we were to say you have to pay for every penny of that, and that's where I use the word subsidize, what would have happened is the Department of Finance would have taken that money out of our budget because DHS was actually paying for it. Then they would have had to have taken it out of our budget and given it to DHS to pay for that, to pay for those things in our agency. Does that make sense?
Representative Liebling.
Well, it sort of makes sense, but I'm back to the point that it kind of messes up what we're told about the real cost of things. And one of the issues, and I'm on the Health and Human Services Committee, and one of the issues is that there's been a very high per diem for that program because of this use of temporary space and so on. And what I think I'm understanding here is that we're not even knowing the real total cost of that space. Of that, and I understand it's temporary, you know, thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that sort of underestimated the cost on that side, and then maybe to a lesser degree overestimated your budget because, you know, it's they're so small compared to you. But I think that is of some concern because, you know, the costs in that program are dramatic. And to hear that we're not even getting what the full cost is somewhat concerning to me.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative Leiby, I would say per diems are a difficult way to measure our cost. There are many things that are out of our control with the per diem. And the per diem actually in the performance report too includes capital costs. This is not something that is normally used in other states. It's not an equal comparison. This isn't money we have in our budget. This isn't money we control. This isn't we make recommendations, but capital bonding money isn't even money that we've made the final decision on. We make the recommendations. So when you look at the per diem and you see the amounts down on the bottom of page 15, those very large amounts, you know, that is not what it costs to operate our prisons every day. We have operational per diem. We have a statutory per diem, which includes this, and we have a marginal per diem, which is the cost of adding new beds. And actually, I do have a handout. I think that might be helpful in explaining that.
Following up on that, Ms. Cornelius, I mean, since I've been here, we've had these debates about per diem. I mean, it's like, I'm sure when I leave here, it'll still be going on. I mean, wouldn't it make sense to have at least a couple of different charts so we could sort of really accurately compare our per diem rates with other states? If you wanted to take the capital projects out and say, well, you know, so we'd have several different models to look at, because we can never seem to compare. And I'm not saying we should be necessarily competing to be the lowest. I don't believe that, but this is always frustrating for this committee.
Mr. Chair, I agree with you. The corrections, I believe it's the corrections compendium, or one of the corrections periodical, has actually stopped trying to collect state per diems because states do calculate them differently. Having the capital expenditure piece out at least brings us closer to what other states do, but states have very different systems. There are some states that their employee benefits don't come directly out of the corrections budget. Perhaps it comes out of their management, whatever that might be in their state. So it is very, and I know there's another one that all their health insurance is in their university system. And so it is very difficult to compare to other states, but I do not know of any other state that has capital expenditures in their operating per diem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually working with the department, and if anybody is interested on this, I'm going to put in a bill to modify what we do on per diems. And I think this sheet of paper that they just passed out is the first time in 8 years that I've had a clear picture of what goes into each of their per diems. So I encourage members to take a look, but if you're interested, you know, you might want to chat with me, and I'm going to continue to work with the department to come up with something that is meaningful when we then look at them.
Representative Haas, thank you very much. Testifiers, you know, and I have talked to you passing in the elevators and corridors about this issue of non-documented citizens that are prisoners that are non-documented citizens in our prison. And how many do we have? And what type of procedure does people go through to be allowed to be in prison back in their original country?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have that in front of me now. I do know that there's international treaties, and I'm very much involved in that. And in those cases, an inmate applies to go back to his or her country. It has to go through the Department of Justice. It also has to agree that the other country has to agree, and we have to agree. The governor has to sign off on it. I know that I get involved in about four of those a year. And sometimes they go back and sometimes they don't, depending on, you know, the there's a number of criteria that each one of the agencies has to decide whether they go or not.
Follow-up questions, Representative Haas. It is my understanding, the way I understand that in my 3x5 card view of this, that the requests have to come from the person in jail or from somebody in the other country? Commissioner?
Yes.
Follow-up?
Representative Haas.
What would be the effect of if we got aggressive and started saying we really would like some of these kept in a foreign country's prison rather than ours?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure. It depends. I know that we have a number of people from Mexico that, you know, don't have to then keep their time in prison when they go back and then are back across the borders. So, you know, I don't know the pros and cons of it, if that's a good thing or not.
Follow up, Representative Hines. I certainly do not know either, but I bet if we got $9 a day paid to the Mexican prison, it would probably be a big amount of money compared to what it is to Stearns County.
Representative Lass.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. I was speaking with a group, North Minneapolis group, this must have been about a week ago, and the question was raised that I had no idea about the answer of, but a woman was concerned about the what she called storage costs of African-American men in the prison system. And my only familiarity was with the per diem rates as passed out on the sheet, but she asserted that there were three different costs and that African-American men had higher storage costs, as she called it. Now, is there any truth to that, or is it just an urban myth, or what is it that she could be getting at? Which, mm-hmm. Is there anything that might help me out on being familiar with that?
Warden, do you know?
Okay.
I've never heard of a story.
That's all I need to know. Thanks.
Thanks for your contribution, Representative Lass.
You're very welcome.
Representative Smith.
The chairman, thank you. Representative Hawes used a term I have never heard before. A non-documented citizen, could he tell me what that is?
Representative Hawes. Representative Hawes misspeaking.
Commissioner, can you talk about the CIP program and back to this page 15, the on per diem at Willow River. Is the per diem higher there because of the CIP program? That's my first question. And are we at capacity at the in the CIP program?
Mr. Chair, the per diem again at SJP tends to be a little bit higher, again because of that economies of scale. So there's not as many offenders there. Also, we were in the process last year of expanding that program a bit, and so sometimes you have to hire staff and get them trained prior to bringing additional offenders in. That's another reason the per diem gets complicated, because we're incurring costs before we have that population necessarily. So that per diem is a little bit higher for this past fiscal year.
I want to see if I understand this. So the reason why it's not at capacity is that you're understaffed at Willow River?
Mr. Chair, sorry, I wasn't talking about the capacity at this point. I was talking about the per diem being higher because we have to hire staff and get them trained prior to bringing offenders in. Right now, our capacity, I believe we're at about 160 offenders in there right now.
160? We had heard 90. Are we wrong on that?
Sorry, Mr. Chair. The capacity is 160. Currently, we're at 105, approximately 105.
And why are we not at capacity?
Mr. Chair, we're not at capacity because at this point we don't have enough people qualifying. There are some people in the women's program that, you know, are cited to go out there and are being screened now. But as far as the men's program, we don't have enough that meet the criteria.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the department, I got a really great flyer when we just went out. I've been out to both of the boot camps last week, and if you could get a copy of this for the department, there's the state statute criteria, then the department has an admission criteria, and then there's an additional preventing entrance criteria. And so I think it would be important for this committee to see all of the tools that are used to screen folks out. This committee actually doubled the request for folks to be out at boot camp, and so it was my understanding when we passed the bonding bill that doubling it would have gone from 90 to 180. In this sheet that they gave, they state that their capacity is 162, but in a handout they gave to my committee in January, they said that their capacity is 146, and then in the numbers for the biennial budget that they used says that the capacity is 146. So, Mr. Chair, I hope that we'll take a look at this. I'm a very fond, I support this program very much, and I think that it actually saves money in the long run, and so I hope we take a look at this program very closely.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to respond to we are working actually very closely with Representative Hillstrom to look at expanding the criteria, and on the handout that you have is some expansion that wasn't there before, and then we're adding a few more things to that. The difference in the capacity, in the beginning, we, you know, had hoped to have 190 when we started the expansion up there. There were some problems with the sewer, you know, because of adding so many more people. The city, Moose Lake, Sturgeon Lake, there was a problem there until they could get, you know, we could pay some money about getting the sewerage. Something fixed there. I don't have all the information on that. But also we didn't, there was a number of, we hadn't filled it as far as staffing up for it. So I think depending on when, you know, the dates that we were giving you the things, it was, you know, we couldn't get up to capacity because of some of those issues. So I think at this point those have been, you know, resolved, and so I think it's going to be a lot better.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So you are planning to get to 162. Is that going to be the capacity number, or is the 146 the number?
The capacity is 162. We're hoping to get up to 162. Mr. Chair, also I got the operational per diem passed out. I just, you know, in that progress report, we got beat up a lot last year because we did not put in the statutory per diem. So we wanted to make it very clear and have it there because, you know, we got criticized for not putting it in. The statutory per diem there that you all have been looking at, that is saying Moose Lake is $122, all of that, that's adding in the 65% of all administration costs, is adding in all of the bonding. We happen to, the last couple of years, have a lot of money in that. So every dollar that was spent in 2007 went into that per diem. So it's, again, as Lisa mentioned, it doesn't compare to anything. That was put in the budget as a statutory thing years ago. We don't use it to measure. You can't measure between states. We did it because, you know, we were told to make sure it was in there. The one I just passed out to you is the operational per diem. In that same report, a couple pages before, we talk about the fact that, what page is it on? Put my glasses on here. On page 10, where we give the per diem of the $89.77, we didn't realize we should have gone into as much detail about that as we did about the one that, I know it was Representative Hillstrom that wanted to make sure it was very, you know, visible in the progress report. So what we're passing out to you is the operational cost that is much more, I mean, that's what we use. Then there is a third per diem, which is the marginal per diem. That's what we get at the time of our, when the budgets are set for the increases in offenders. So it's, what, 53? This year it's $53.73. So we don't get, whichever per diem you go, $89.77, we don't get that. It's just a way to compare better to other states.
Mr. Chair.
So that's why it's confusing. And I think, too, when you look at Moose Lake, you know, talking about, if you're looking at this per diem that we put in where it says 122, obviously we would save... $122.42. If that were our real cost, obviously it would be considerably less money to send everybody to Appleton. But that is not the per diem that means anything. It was in the statute. We have to do it, so we put it in.
Thank you very much. To the testifiers, on MNCOR, when a prisoner works for MNCOR, They're paid a rate, and then the money from that, the pay to stay rate, is subtracted from their checks, and then that net value went back to help operate MnCor, or to balance MnCor. Now MnCor is starting to balance on its own, I understand. That's what I got out of the reading. Was that $1 million? And if that is $1 million, could that amount of dollars, whatever it is, be helped use to balance out this deficit in some manner?
Commissioner? Ms. Cornelius?
Chair Paymar, Representative Hawes. Some offenders who work in the industry systems where the products are traded across state lines are paid minimum wage. And yes, we do deduct funds for room and board. That money, per the commissioner's statutory authority, was put back into MnCor to assist with their self-sufficiency. There isn't really an extra $1 million hanging out there every year. That would be dependent on sales. That would be dependent on several different factors on how MnCor's financial prospects are looking for the year. If MnCor does have additional funding, we already put that back into our own agency. By statute, we're allowed to use it for educational costs, and we're allowed to use it for reentry. It's always one-time money, though. It's not ongoing funding, but we have used that funding. Our balance is relatively low. We try to keep MnCor with at least, and we're allowed to by statute, 6 months worth of operating costs in case we do have a downturn in the economy.
Follow-up, please.
Thank you. It is one-time money, but it would be pretty predictable money if, in fact, you think MnCor is going to be improving and growing each year, which I think it is, and this is pay-for-stay money taken out of the checks that they earn. That's a pretty consistent amount of dollars, but what you're saying is that you will be using that to balance out your budgets.
Deputy Commissioner... Ms. Cornelius.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hawes, I would not probably use the phrase personally that we're using it to balance our budget. We are using it for some one-time expenditures, and we have already seen this current fiscal year that sales are down because of the economic downturn. So we are not assured that this is an ongoing $1 million we will have every year.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was going back to the per diem. I apologize, Mr. Chair. But I was surprised to learn when I went out to the prisons that ABE money from the Department of Education was used. Is that in your per diem someplace, or is the federal money that you get as well in the per diem, or is that above and beyond in the cost as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilton, that is not included in our per diem. It is extra federal dollars we get.
And the ABE money is not included.
Representative Hilton.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel like we're jumping around a little bit here, and I'm not sure if you have a... I'm going to jump again if you want to let me. Otherwise, I can hold off. I don't know if you have a...
Well,
order.
I think we're done on the per diem. Unless members have questions, so then we can jump, because I have some several questions about their operation support and...
I was actually going to ask a question about that as well.
Well, why don't we, and Representative Eastman, I was just on the podium.
Yeah, I was just going to ask.
Okay, let's have Representative Eastman, then we'll go into their, Representative Eastman.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I guess I'm looking at the report here, too, that we were handed on page 10, where it talks about the per diem and the trend over time, and shows in 98, and I guess we're talking about the operational per diem here, so what it would be on the sheet, that's what it lines up with. But in 98, we were looking at an $83 per diem, and in 08, we're looking at an $89 per diem, which is a relatively low increase. But in between there, we saw some dramatic changes, and I guess I'm curious why. Maybe you could talk about what were the circumstances that created that, and is it realistic to think that we should be growing at the rate that we're growing now, projecting out?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastman, that's a very good question. We did see a slight decline in FY04 and 05 as we, for the second biennium in a row, took significant cuts to the facilities division.
The increase you're seeing from 06 to 07 and 08 have several different factors that are involved in that. Part of that has to do with the expansion of Faribault. Again, having some operating money, hiring staff ahead of time, getting them trained before the inmates came in the system. That is one factor. There are also several things that the department itself does not control when it comes to our per diem. We are not the agency that negotiates increases with the labor union. That is a cost to us. There's been inflationary costs, in fact, significant inflationary costs for our health care for our offenders. And we are seeing significant mental health issues and have had to provide mental health treatment also to offenders. So there are several things we don't have control over. My hope is that this per diem, you will see, will level off a little bit over this next biennium as we do fill Faribault up. We also expanded, I believe, at Stillwater in the past couple years, and Shakopee, and then Willow River. So all of these components, I wish the per diem were as simple as, this is our budget, this is how many offenders we have, and this is what the daily rate is. But it is far from that simple. It's very complicated. And when we're looking at an average across the whole system, some of our facilities cost a lot more money than others. Oak Park Heights is a little more expensive. Providing services for females is more expensive. And if you do look at the operational per diem, you will tend to see those medium custody facilities such as Moose Lake, however, because of the DHS thing not this year, Lionel Lake, and Faribault, once Faribault is complete, you know, those will probably look more similar, but the rest kind of are very, very different. So when you try to average this out and put all those other components in, there are shifts.
Representative Flynn, this is more of a comment. If you want to respond, you can. But I was on the committee back when we were in 05 and 04 when we were seeing reductions in per diem, and I know there's a lot of things going on that were kind of helping us achieve that. But we were seeing the capacity issue there, and that's when the Faribault projects and all that stuff were. And the argument that was that we were going to create so many more efficiencies that we were going to be able to see per diems remain at a very manageable rate. I guess I'm just looking at the trajectory of the line here. Apparently there isn't any room inside the budget that we're seeing right now to begin to see that flatten. You're saying maybe out in the future, and I guess I just think that's a little disheartening, because I mean we did a lot of investment in how we house prisoners, and we're not seeing the economic promise that was supposed to come out of that, and I think that's concerning to me.
We have some data here, and I think Representative Coles wanted to ask some questions, and I also did. We have about 25 minutes left before we open it up to any testifiers. Representative Coles, did you have some questions about the operations support?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Either for the Commissioner or Ms. Cornelius, can you comment just very briefly now and then follow up with me in a little more detail? As I look at the positions and spreadsheet that you passed out, the operational support staffing, I have questions with regard to two areas in general. First, the financial services area, and second, the IT area. I did a very quick count. It looks like we've got approximately 80 positions in the financial services area and approximately 70 positions in the IT area. I'm having a hard time coming to grasp without some further discussion. I'm not passing judgment now as to why we need 70 or 80 people or 80 positions doing financial services within the department. It's a $1 billion budget. Yes, I absolutely think we need to be doing everything we can to make sure we're spending the money correctly. But help me understand that. And then similarly, with regard to the IT, I mean, we've got 70 positions about, and many of them appropriately highly compensated positions. But is there an opportunity for some savings in those areas without impacting public safety?
Mr. Cornelius.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles. We actually have done a lot in these areas already, centralizing and regionalizing some of these services. I do have a handout I can give to the committee. It does give some information. It's not all-inclusive, but let me give you a brief synopsis of what finance does. They're responsible for the capital biennial budgets, our annual spending plan. They pay all of our bills. They do any accounts receivable, staff payroll, Staff payroll is over 360,000 transactions a year for staff payroll. They do offender banking and payroll. That's over 310,000 transactions every year. We do.
Ms. Cornelius, I apologize for interrupting, but how much of your payroll is automated? I mean, I understand there's transactions. I work, when I'm not here, I work for a company that employs approximately 2,000 people here in the state of Minnesota, and they do a lot of a lot of transactions as well, but I don't think we have this many people in our finance and accounting area. I don't know for sure. Again, that's what I want to, I understand they're doing a lot of transactions, there's a lot of employees, but that in and of itself, the transaction number isn't terribly meaningful to me if that can be managed by one or two people, and maybe it can't. I'm not suggesting that it can, but if everything is automated, we know how much somebody's getting paid, and we're doing direct deposits, help me understand this. I'm struggling.
Here, Pam, our representative calls. Most of the system is automated. And I think it would be a wonderful thing if employees could just enter their own timesheets as they do, and a click of the button and it was done. That simply is not the case. We have payroll people, I believe we probably only have about maybe 5.5 of them, but they have to review, the supervisor does approve, but they have to review and they have to run reports to make sure that people are not claiming over 80 hours. Our payroll is very complicated in a 24/7 facility. We have shift differentials, we have shift exchanges, we have payroll rules with 7 different labor agreements that all have different rules. There's a lot that's automated, but there's also a lot of review. This is one of our largest expenditures, and we take great care to make sure that it's done accurately. And it's not as simple as just pressing a button, because we do have direct deposit. In fact, our staff, the Department of Management and Budget, takes care of the actual direct deposit and that stuff. It is automated. We have reduced this number of staff or staff payroll. Probably, I believe we used to maybe have 12 people. Now it's probably more like 5.5.
Mr. Chairman Cornelius, thank you. But, I mean, it's helpful. But let me ask another question. How many of our employees within the facilities? And you mentioned the 7 different labor agreements that you have to do with. How many of them are hourly employees, as opposed to, are they all hourly? There's got to be a better way to do this, and I'm not suggesting that there's an easy way to do it, and I'm also recognizing that there are we're talking here now about possibly bargaining table issues and how we compensate people and how we track their time, etc. But it seems as though you have a very complicated system, and I recognize that. Is there a way to simplify it,
Ms. Cornelius?
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, I appreciate your comments, because we too sometimes get frustrated dealing with 7 different labor agreements, and we are always looking for ways to try to uncomplicate things. We do not necessarily have direct control over that. We do work with the labor negotiation teams, and we participate on them, and when things are complicated, we do try to ease them. We work off the statewide system also, which we do not ourselves control. When we do find room and suggestions for improvement, we always pass those forward.
Mr. Cole, if you could just very brief, I'll leave the financial services with Seth and further discussion about that outside of committee. If you could very briefly touch on the IT piece, and then we'll have some additional conversations about that.
Ms. Cornelius.
Mr. Chair, I'm actually going to ask Chris Bray to come discuss the IT issue.
Ms. Bray, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Chris Bray, Deputy Commissioner of Community Services. Mr. Chair, committee members, I'll just tell you briefly, there are 4 components of the IT budget, I would say: application development, program development, research evaluation, data analysis, and then maintaining all the hardware and software. And we do that for all the 10 prisons, the field services offices, and central office. So there's a lot to it. But I would also say We currently are holding off on filling vacancies because we're waiting to see what happens with OET. The, as you know, the state is in the process, I believe, of centralizing a lot of the IT functions. And so our look at IT is we're really just waiting to see what's going to happen. We are going to lose positions and we are going to lose functions. We're not clear yet on exactly what that's going to look like.
Mr. Chair, I'll be done. I would appreciate an opportunity to have some more conversations about, you know, what kind of IT functionality exists today and how it's impacting or providing or enhancing public safety. So we can do that offline.
Mr. Bray, as long as you're there, how come you don't show up on this list of operation support staffing or as a new hire? Is this just an oversight? We asked for a list of operations put there. I don't see your name listed.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I noticed that too. My position is actually in the community services budget, and I think that's why it didn't show up. But I do report directly to the commissioner, so it could have been. We could have pulled it out and put it there, and that probably would have made it easier to look at.
So are there some people and are there other people in community services that should be in operations, Ms. Cornelius?
Mr. Chair, the Operations Support Division is a division that serves the entire agency. It doesn't serve specifically community services, and it doesn't specifically serve facilities. It's the entity within our organization that provides services to all. The Facilities Division is kept separate. The Community Services Division is kept separate. That's why Deputy Commissioner Bray shows up in Community Services. So there are other managers in our agency, but they show up in their respective units, their respective divisions, excuse me.
Yeah, Ms. Cornelia, we'll probably have to have a discussion in my office, but I am, like, totally confused about the way this material is presented to us because, you know, originally the commissioner talked about this consolidation, where we had a spike of staff people from 2004 to today of over 100, and that was all based on, at least what the commissioner said, was a consolidation of management. But then in your document you say the Operations Support Division does not include all prison management positions. It's like impossible to understand this, Ms. Cornelius.
Mr. Chair, actually, I was the one who testified on that, and we talked about centralization of support services. And when I was talking about that, it was in regards to the finance staff, the human resource staff, and the information technology staff. We have not consolidated managerial staff in that fashion. We centralize and regionalize functions in order to attempt to reduce staffing.
Can I just ask a quick question here about what we have? We have an assistant commissioner, a deputy commissioner. We have a governor's staff position. Why is that coming out of your budget? I realize it's small, but why doesn't that come out of the governor's budget?
Mr. Chair, that's the state sex offender coordinator, and a portion of it comes. Oh, Margaret? Oh. There's two positions in our budget, and one of them is the liaison. Margaret Vessel is the liaison, and she also works in transportation and other areas, so, you know, 0.20 is part of the is in our budget, and it's in some other budgets as well and other agencies. And then we have a portion of the sex offender, the state sex offender coordinator, who's also in part of public safety's budget and human services.
Are you sure?
Am I sure? What?
I believe that you're an error, Commissioner, just on the person, but I understand. I think that person has left the governor's office, that's okay.
Rima.
I get it.
Rima took her place.
And who is the executive aide, and who's the executive aide to?
That would be my secretary.
That's your secretary.
Right.
Okay. And you have an assistant. You have an administrative. Okay. You have assistant and deputy commissioner. And then there's two wardens and two. Are there two wardens and two commissioners at each facility also, or two wardens and two assistant wardens? Is that?
Mr. Chair, there's one warden, and then they
associate
have
warden.
Associate warden, one of operations and one of administration.
And why do we have two information officers and one director of communications?
Mr. Chair, those are our communications staff, our media staff. And actually, when I was asked to compare to other state agencies, I think we're very, very lean in that area. The Department of Transportation has 17 media staff, and we just have these three.
Mr. Chair, to that point, Mr. Chair, I've actually looked at this issue with a couple other agencies as well, and I want to acknowledge or affirm what Deputy Commissioner Cornelius is saying. I have some concerns about the number of media and communication staff in. Several other state agencies. This isn't one that I have that concern in necessarily, and not that it's not a place to take a look, but there are other state agencies that have many people communicating, and I'm not sure what they're communicating about all the time.
We have several members.
Mr. Chair, I just want to also point out that it's not to put out media. It's to answer, you know, questions. We get hundreds of calls a month, you know, what does this guy, you know, what's his prior record, and, you know, it's whether it's for the counties or not, we're ending up, you know, doing a lot of work checking this out. And also part of their responsibility is to help bring all the stuff to you guys that you're requesting. So it is, you know, very lean compared to other departments.
Okay, we have three other questions, and then I would like to stop at 10-2 and see if there's anyone from the audience who would like to testify. This is Representative Liebling, Olin, and Bigham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cornelius, I want to go back to the line of questioning that Representative Cove was pursuing about IT, which you said in response, I think it was in response to his questioning, that you have seven different labor agreements and that this is driving some of the complexity that requires you to have all this IT staff. And I'd like to ask you, you know, what are those seven different agreements? Maybe you can give this to us on paper later on, but I want to know what those are. And then I want to know what the main differences are there between them that causes all this complexity. And let me just say that, you know, in other areas that we're looking at, in particular health and human services, but also when we're looking at counties, everywhere that we're looking at our budget now, we're talking about ways that we have the complexity of our systems and how that drives cost often. And I'm hearing there's seven different labor agreements, and that's requiring you to have all this staff. And I'm just wondering if, and I know this isn't all in your complete control, but I'm just wondering if we can't some way begin to simplify this so that we can not force you to have all this complexity and actually maybe even make things run a little better. So could you address that, please?
Ms. Cornelia.
Mr. Chair, Representative Levy, actually when I was talking about the seven labor agreements making something complicated, it was specifically about the staff payroll. The number of IT staff doesn't really fall into that piece of it. The reason we need to have five or six payroll staff is because of the complication of those labor agreements. There's ACME, MAPE, MMA, the teachers, the nurses, law enforcement. I got six off the top of my head. I'm probably missing one. But overtime is different for each contract, dependent on different criteria. And those are the things that are complicated.
Sure. Thank you. I understood that. I got that. But what I mean is, maybe we can get into some of the substance of the differences. I mean, maybe some of those differences don't have to be differences. Maybe it could be, you know, obviously you can't treat all these categories alike, but maybe there are things that when we negotiate these contracts, there could be things that that we try to make a little more standardized so that it makes this all less expensive to administer. That's my point. And so if you could, maybe you could give us in writing some of those, what those real differences are that force you to maintain all these different positions to calculate this out.
Mr. Nolan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have just been going back, and I think you're going to need to provide some information, because after Representative Cole and Representative Paymar got done with their series of questions on administrative and IT, I'm at a total loss, because it sounds to me, from what I'm hearing, that you have the same, you have in each prison system, you have these same groups of people as you do at the main office. And I really would like to see a breakdown not only of the main office that I'm seeing, but if there's a whole other tier of people out here somewhere, I'd like to see that breakdown.
Maybe you can provide that information, Ms. Cornelia, to the committee. Representative Bigham?
Thank you, Chief Paymar. And on those lines, maybe like job description or something would be, if I think that's maybe what some people are asking for, but not obviously of every single person. But for example, what is the difference between a specialist senior, a specialist intermediate, and a specialist? I mean, those kinds of things may be helpful too, but also just job descriptions of some of the folks. And I know this is helpful, at least breaking down the departments. And then I actually had another question, not related to staff, but related to a prior budget presentation that they did. Is this an appropriate time, Mr. Chair, for me to
ask? Yeah, we have a couple minutes.
I noticed on one of the slides, and I wish I had it with me. I was looking through myself, but it was on the GPS sex offender tracking. And please correct me if I'm wrong, but I had thought that you weren't using as many of them as maybe you thought were going to be used, or am I mixing something? Am I mixing that up with a different slide?
What is your title again, Ms. Bray?
I'm Deputy Commissioner of Community Services.
Okay, Deputy Commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
There was a question for you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bingham, we don't use as much GPS equipment as we do, for example, electronic home monitoring. And the reason is that oftentimes GPS doesn't work in the areas where the sex offenders are living. But I would be happy to get you a breakdown. I think that would be a better way to go than...
Yep. Representative Figgum.
One more, just one follow-up. Have you already purchased, like, do you order those ahead of time, or do you do those on a case-by-case basis?
Deputy Commissioner. Mr. Mears.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Ken Mears. I'm the director with the Community Services Division. And Representative Bingham, we do not own any GPS equipment. We have contracts with private vendors that supply the equipment. They do the hookups of the offenders and do the monitoring of the offenders while they're on GPS. And then they will report to the agents if there are violations. But we contract with private vendors to provide that service.
Maybe you can follow up with him. And, okay,
I can follow up.
We'll have some time. Maybe if there isn't anyone who wants to testify, but I did want to give, if people did come down to testify, I'd like to give them the opportunity. Is there anyone in the audience that wants to testify about the Department of Corrections or about their budget? And if you could just keep your comments to a few minutes, that would be helpful. Please introduce yourself for the record. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Dan Graves. I'm a registered dental hygienist. Thank you, Mr. Paymar, and the committee members for listening to my testimony this morning. I am a former employee of the Minnesota Department of Corrections at Oak Park Heights. I left a lucrative 27-year career in private practice to take a huge pay cut because I wanted to do something different in a public health arena, and I chose to go into corrections at Oak Park Heights. I was the first professional in the state, dental professional, to obtain a national certification for corrections healthcare providers. I am familiar with the national standards, and I can tell you what is currently happening at my former facility at Oak Park Heights is anything but. Representative Paymar and I share a concern of restoring the ombudsman for the state, for the Department of Corrections. There have been a lot of things that have happened that I think could have been prevented had there been more transparency. Under the Plenty administration, we lost our prison accreditation in 2003. We also that same year have no more ombudsmen, and now we've lost our additional set of eyes under the Department of Health. Pretty much anything that the Department of Corrections wants to do, they do, including keeping a 7-time substantiated employment harasser, Dr. Norman Ide, at the facility at Oak Park Heights. According to Tammy Nelson, the Director of Human Resources, between the two facilities at Stillwater and Oak Park Heights, each of those investigations cost the state $100,000. Now, I'm currently in litigation with the state because the workplace was intolerable and I had to leave a job again that I took a huge pay cut to take on because it was work I loved and I was really good at it. I'm just asking the committee, I know a way to clean up some of the waste of the Department of Corrections. There's absolutely no reason Dr. Norman and I should still be employed at the Department of Corrections. There is tremendous litigation going on from the offenders, including myself, and I will also end by telling you that currently the Department of Corrections and Norman Ide are being investigated for 57 board complaints before the Board of Dentistry due to patient abuse by this dentist. Every level of supervisory position at the DOC, every single level knew about it, and they did nothing. In closing, I just want to say that Nan Larson's proposal to do away with routine dental care is completely unconstitutional. It violates the Eighth Amendment rights of offenders. If her proposal goes forward by only doing urgent or emergent dental care in the prison, I can guarantee you, you talk about waste, you're going to see it. You're going to see it from the offenders, and you're definitely going to see it from all the special agencies, the ACLU, the NAACP, and so on. They will be representing the offenders. They will be suing the state, and I can guarantee you they will win. So please take it all under consideration, and above all, try to restore some oversight to the DOC, because right now it's a runaway train. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is anyone else who wishes to address the committee? If not, then Representative Hillstrom, you had a question. I'm sorry I cut you off, but I thought there were more people that wanted to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's actually taking us back to the line of questioning of Representative Liebling. Getting back to that IT, and the department talked about they have to have all these different IT because they have all these different labor agreements. And, Mr. Chair, there is a proposal by the department to once again change and make a difference by taking folks out of the retirement plan. And so my question would be, what is that going to do to IT to once again have another difference within the department? If there's 7 different agreements, are we going to have more IT folks to take care of that difference as well?
Ms. Cornelius. Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, again, the labor agreements don't impact IT.
Sorry, labor service. Financial services.
Financial services. Taking those people out of SERP won't affect our payroll. That has to do with a retirement clause. It will not at all impact how payroll is processed.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Hillstrom.
So the employees would be getting a different retirement package, but the amount taken out of their check wouldn't change, the amount that they're paying wouldn't change, so they'd still be paying the same amount and be getting less benefit.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, their contribution to the retirement fund and the department's contribution to the retirement fund would both decrease. It would not, however, change how payroll is processed. That's not an actual transaction we do. That's something behind the scenes. But yes, that would change.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner, can I just get you up here one more time? Where'd she go? Oh. Just before we adjourn here, one more question. I'm going to put in writing, Commissioner, that you respond to this committee with what you would do in if there is a situation that we ask you to make a 5% cut, and where you would prioritize those cuts. You can, I guess, choose to ignore the committee, but I'm going to ask you to do that in writing so we have some assessment and that you have made something, that you've made an effort internally to look at what that might mean. I just think it would, we've already had the discussion, but it would be irresponsible for this committee not to know that as we move forward. And then the final thing is, and I just want to get this on the record from you also, as you know, I requested earlier on several different scenarios early release, just to see what that would be in case we had like severe cuts. Other states have done that, and you graciously provided those numbers to us relative to bed savings. I'm not about to move forward with anything, and I don't believe that this committee is, but I just want to get this on the record at this point, because we don't know what this target will be, but Representative Seifert was on NPR talking about ways that we can save money, and he offered the idea of Representative Coles did about the private prisons, but he also talked about not locking up or maybe early release of some nonviolent offenders who were convicted of DWIs or drug offenses, which was some of the information that I had requested from you. I just want to know, is this off the table from your perspective and the governor's perspective? Because I don't want to even, is this, or should we be waiting for these discussions? But if this is off the table, then let's not even talk about it here. If the governor is not going to look at any possible scenarios where some non-violent drug offenders or DWI offenders might be better off in treatment or in a less in an institution that's not a state prison.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we have low-risk, nonviolent people in prison that enough that would, come to that number. The information that I sent Mr. Carter, at your request, was looked at the governing offenses, and you look at the property offenses, and we do have a number of people that are in prison on property offenders that have very serious offenses. They're charged with a burglary, but it's a rape or an aggravated assault. In fact, the person that's alleged to have shot the deputy, and the Nomen County deputy, is off paper. He was released from prison a couple of years ago, is no longer on supervision. He was in as a property offender and a burglary, and he had broken into a house and severely beat a woman.
I wasn't talking about property offenders. I was talking about drug offenders or DWI offenders, which are, we've had quite a spike of.
Oh, I was thinking of what I had sent on property. And
this is what Representative Seifert, I know Representative Seifert doesn't speak for the governor or always this caucus, but I just want to get this I just want to get this clear. So if we're moving ahead with any model, we're excluding this based on your testimony today.
The governor has made it very clear to me that he does not want early release, and so that's why I'm not moving forward with that.
Yeah, very good. Any other questions of Mr. Cornish?
Mr. Chair, just a thought here. I guess in defense of the commissioner's stance of not providing information, the same thing's going to happen to us. If we go to your leadership and we say, well, here's a place where you could take 5%, here's a place where you take 10%, you darn well they're going to do it. And I see the strategy here, although we don't like it. When you cut, and you ask them to make another cut, and they don't want to suggest any cuts, the courts have an interesting strategy where they can just not take the business to them, and they can and manage their own budget by attrition or whatever. But the corrections here are kind of in a tough spot. So maybe we should take the same strategy when Chair of the Ways and Means and the Speaker come to us and say, we can't take any cuts because we're a core function of government. We don't want to release bad guys and girls, and there's no place to go. Because if we give them an avenue and say that we could take 5%, they're going to do it. Let's just say we're public safety. You know, we don't want to release any bad people, and we don't want to extinguish any people's constitutional rights. So give us more money than the other committees, or else.
Of course, believe me, I am advocating that harder than you can imagine. But I do think the public needs to know, and I don't want to belabor it, the public needs to know what the impact of a potential cut might be. I mean, does this mean we're closing a prison? Does it mean we're laying off guards? Does it mean that central office can take some layoffs? I mean, that's why we're analyzing all this information. And I mean, the courts, I think, at least gave us that, you know, the low, medium, and high priority, so we can make an informed decision. And the public knows if this is a possible scenario. And I think the public deserves to know, and we're not getting that. All we're hearing is that corrections can't cut. So I'm going to put that in writing, Commissioner, and you can choose to do what you want with it.
You know, Mr. Chair, I just do want to say that we are a little different than the courts, and I'm not saying we're more important we certainly aren't. I know judges, I've worked for them forever. But, you know, it isn't. We can't close down for a day. We can't choose not to, you know, give, you know, service to the inmates that are, you know, that they commit to us. So that's, I guess, where I'm, you know, in struggling to answer your question.
Well, as Representative Cole said, if you're not going to cooperate with the committee will figure it out, and you're probably not going to like that. Any other questions before the committee? Thank you, Commissioner. I should say one thing. Yeah, please.
We do have a $2 million cut in support operations. I mean, you know, what you were just looking at today, that is one of our recommendations. So,
Mr. Cornelius, Commissioner, thank you for your testimony. This meeting is adjourned.